Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
I'm Lou Bank.
And I'm Greg Benson.
And this is an ad for Ancestral Agave Syrup, the critically acclaimed award-winning syrup that helps gringo bartenders better make margaritas, Negronis,
Lou, hold up,
old
are you just
fashions?
This is how you start your podcast.
What?
It's not an ad for Ancestral Agave Syrup.
Well, of course it is. I'm just cutting costs by not paying writers to make something new. I'm just using an old script.
You pay writers?
Is that some kind of jab?
No, I'm just saying
what,
that...
What are you saying?
Well, look, we've got this amazing syrup that's made in an ancestral manner, cooked down from the sap of the agave, harvested the way these families would to make pulque. It's a quality product. It deserves a quality presentation.
Yeah, okay, hang on. Ancestral agave syrup is made by real families following traditional methods. Unlike the industrial Blue Weber syrup you get everywhere else, Ancestral is cooked down from agua miel harvested from Salmiana in Hidalgo, Mexico. It is the grade A Vermont maple to the sticky diner syrup you've been using for your cocktails. Ingredients matter, both in how your cocktail tastes and how you treat the earth. Ancestral is better for both. Is that good?
Sure. Or maybe confusing instead of cheesy. Look, just visit ancestralagave.com to learn more and to order your world-class agave syrup today.
And we'll call that a wrap. Catch you next ad, Greg.
Hasta pronto?
Ancestral Agave Syrup. Available online at ancestralagave.org and wherever Greg and Lou were able to coerce store owners into carrying it.
I'm Lou Bank.
And I'm Natasha Tucker from Mind Your Plastic.
And this is Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Gringex bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico. And Natasha, thank you for joining me today to talk about agave straws.
So happy to be here.
So, you know, this is a thing that I've been seeing for years, going around to restaurants and bars and even places that aren't connected to Mexican food or to tequila or mezcal. I'll see that they've got these straws that purport to be environmentally friendly, that are made from the spent fibers of the agave plant. And, you know, I've had so many friends. I've got a friend in Durango, Colorado, not Durango. Well, I've got friends in Durango, Mexico, too, but they don't give me straws. But she's got this little diner, and she was so excited to find the agave straws because she felt like, oh, I'm doing something better for the environment. But Natasha, I don't think that's true.
No, I tend to be the bearer of bad news in my role with Mind Your Plastic. And, you know, what we really focus on is how we can eliminate plastic pollution. So with that comes along, you know, looking at all of these really innovative alternatives that are coming down to help us do just that. But sometimes what we don't realize is that while these alternatives may sound really, really good, sometimes they're still not the best alternative. You know, so in the case of agave straws, there's some benefits for sure. But it doesn't mean that they're the silver bullet response to our plastic pollution problem when it comes to straws.
So, okay, great. So that's exactly what I'd expected to hear. So tell me what the good is.
So when we think of straws specifically, and, you know, I really love how straws became the face of the plastic pollution movement. You know, when I think we all saw that video of the turtle with the straw being pulled from its nostril. And it was just, I think, just a global gut punch moment where we realized, oh, now we're truly seeing the impacts of the work that or of what we're putting into the environment and how it's affecting animals, even though there's been massive impacts before that. But so the good that comes from these types of straws that are coming out, so we see straws being made from agave or even bamboo, cornstarch, like all these various materials. Yeah. The good is that they're made from renewable resources. Unlike our straws and a lot of our low quality, low value, single use plastics that are made from fossil fuels. So again, a really intensive, damaging, harmful impact on our environment through creating these really low value items that are thrown out at the end of their life and serve a purpose for a very short period of time. At least with these other alternatives, they are coming from renewable resources. So it could be considered less harmful than the fossil fuel extraction that is required, because then we can keep it going. However, where the problem lies, and I'm sure that's maybe where we were going next, not to jump the gun, but
yeah, no. That's I felt the butt coming. You just made it a however, so I'm good with that.
However, you know, what a lot of folks don't realize is, you know, some of these materials, especially when they're being used for food packaging or to use alongside food, food is often wet, it's moist, and like we all probably have seen with paper straws, they get kind of nasty after a little while. So what happens is a lot of these alternatives, you know, the cassava root, the agave, all of these, they can't just be taken in their original form and made into a straw and shipped out and call it a day. There's a lot of chemicals that get added to them that give them their shape, and so that they have the integrity for us to use with moist things and to stand up. But then what happens, these are being marketed as compostable, biodegradable. but that's true in certain settings. And unfortunately, the broad majority of those settings are not available to most of the public. And certain conditions are required for them to break down and be compostable like they're all marketed as. So therein lies some of the problems.
That's exactly why I reached out to you, Natasha. You know, back in I actually know the date, back in November of 2021, I met some guys, really, really nice guys, who were marketing these agave straws. And they wanted us to promote the straws on this podcast, not this episode, but literally like, you know, 2 years ago, two and a half years ago. And I said, okay, but I want to make sure that these really are compostable. You know, I've been composting in our backyard here since we moved into the house, you know, 2008. So I put some of the straws in that compost. I put some in a little container next to the compost outside. I put some of them in this jar of water. None of those, not one of those straws has broken down at all. Mm-hmm. So there's the one piece of it is, if you think you're getting these at home and you can throw them into your compost, everything's fine. Clearly not. Mm. But I guess my other question is then, like, what is it? Do you have any idea what makes the straw compostable in certain settings?
Yeah. So, you know, we have different types of composting, which I think is what starts to trip people up, is they hear composting as one blanket term, kind of like recycling. These are all big words that we hear often, but what do they actually mean? And when we think of things that are labeled as compostable, I mean, first of all, when it comes to how products are marketed, there is no regulation on what you can put on your product. I could put a label on my metal cup and say, this is compostable. No one's stopping me. Really? There's no regulation. In Canada, we're working on that in terms of like how we label certain plastics. We're working on banning certain types of plastics, including compostable and what we're calling alternative plastics and non-conventional plastics. However, you know, again, back to my original point with the compostables, there's different types of composting. And one you mentioned is backyard composting, which is typically what people will do in the absence of, you know, their municipal or community collection that they have. Here in Halifax and many parts of Canada, we have municipal compost collection where, like our garbage and our recyclables, we'll have a truck come around, pick up our green bin, and then that goes to a composting facility at our municipal waste management location. And then there's industrial composting. So when you see things, and I believe in our email exchange, we talked about a certification called BPI, which is essentially a standardization saying that these items are compostable under BPI's rigorous testing that's required. The thing is this testing happens in industrial composting facilities. So the difference between your industrial composting facility, your municipal composting facility, and your backyard, the conditions are very different. As you mentioned, your backyard municipal compost is, you know, you're managing your own things. If you put plastic in it, it's not going to break down. And the reason why is because for these to effectively be broken down, again, in similar conditions as BPI is using for recommending their, for putting their certifications on, your industrial compost facilities have the presence of certain microorganisms. They also have more oxygen. They're being turned more frequently, higher presence of heat and moisture, as well as specific carbon to nitrogen ratios. So all of those factors combined help break down the compostable items and then make it into compost at the end of it all.
But so my question then, Natasha, is if I can't break it down in my backyard compost, but it can be broken down in industrial level compost, industrial grade composting facility, that suggests to me that there's something in this straw that's not as simple as the eggshells and the broccoli stems. And it suggests to me that maybe that is, if not plastic, at least some kind of material that we don't necessarily want in our soil. And once you compost it, doesn't that just add it to the soil? You're nodding. That
I'm nodding. And this is again, I think, some of the inherent challenges with what we see as a great alternative is you're exactly right. I mean, what then happens to those additives that are broken down once they're broken down? And, you know, while it's a similar example, but I always use the example of plastic pollution in itself is, you know, once it breaks down in the environment, it doesn't go away. It just right. continues to break down into microplastics and then into nanoplastics and effectively getting into our soil and into our food chain and us.
And in our bloodstream, yeah.
Bloodstream, placenta, brain, everything, right? So again, we don't know enough about how those impacts are affecting humans, but we know that plastic's in the body, and I'm sure in the next 10, 15, 20 years, we're going to see some really interesting information come down about the harmful impacts of plastic on the human body. But that's not what we're here to talk about today.
But kind of we are.
In a way,
actually.
Right? Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, look, the reason I wanted to record this episode is because I think there are so many restaurant owners, bar owners, beverage directors who are turning to this as the solution. Okay, now I've got a solution. I can go deal with some other problem.
But absolutely.
It's literally kicking the can down the road, right?
Exactly. And you know, that's where, you know, part of the work that our organization does, that Mind Your Plastic does, is it's really how do we prevent plastic pollution and how do we find the systemic change that needs to happen? How do we make that happen? Because again, we can spend all this money on, and this is what we're facing here in Canada is, you know, do we continue to invest more in compostables as well as the end of life management that needs to happen to fully incorporate compostables into, you know, our packaging system here and our material stream? Do we invest in that? Or do we invest in what are the changes that need to happen so that we don't need all of this packaging? You know, and the UK mm-hmm. is already kind of leading the way in this work where, again, while it's not going to apply to everything, we're seeing a lot more focus on the reduction of packaging in itself and the movement of reuse and refill, you know, in your large scale grocery stores, or even, you know, like last two weeks ago, Starbucks even announced the expansion of its to-go pilot cup program, where you can go into a Starbucks and get it in a reusable cup, pay a deposit, and bring it back. So when we're thinking of, you know, the bar owners and whatnot, you know, there's many other options. And, you know, what we often see too is these small to medium-sized businesses who really don't have a lot to play with when it comes to their mm-hmm. their bottom line. So these items tend to be much more expensive than your regular, you know, virgin plastic straw. So not only are business owners now paying more for the alternative, and I'm using air quotes for those of you who prefer not having a video attached, but for these alternatives, but they're not actually a great alternative. Unless you have the access to industrial composting facilities, then it could
but even then you're still putting microplastics into the soil.
And again, the way we look at it is, okay, systemically, like, do you need a disposable straw? Like, you know, maybe you might need it for your to-go customers if that's something that you have. I'm assuming a bar probably doesn't have a ton of people not sitting in their bar. I don't know.
Well, in New Orleans, you know, they're walking the streets with their...
Fair.
Yeah.
So, again, the question for us is, well, instead of spending your money over and over again buying single-use disposable straws and having that as a consistent line item on your profit and loss statements and all of that, is why not just take the upfront cost and purchase things like reusable metal straws, things that can go, you know, whatever one best suits your clientele. But most bars, I would assume, wash their dishes. So they already have a dishwasher, a sanitizer. So it's only easy to be able to put those things through and to be able to use them instead of these disposable items. Because again, like, even though it's not single-use plastic per se, you know, it's still a single-use disposable item, which still are incredibly resource-intensive. And again, as you mentioned, the additives that are in them breaking down in the soil, it's still a relatively new thing. I'm sure there's some statistics out there, but I don't have them off the top of my head. But again, I can assume that having these chemicals breaking down in our soil is not a good thing.
Yeah. You know, another alternative, I think, is just get more people to drink neat spirits. If we just drink neat spirits, we don't even need, I guess kids can't drink neat spirits. They'll still need straws. But
once they become adults, then they can.
Okay. Well, you know, honestly, I think, unless you've got something to add, that, that in essence covers my objective of tanking the agave straw industry.
Yeah, and again, I would just say, you know, for business owners looking to make those changes, you know, I know it can be a bit of a mind shift, but what we often see is businesses are making the change that is the easiest in the moment. Mm-hmm. So again, that one-for-one swaps, instead of plastic straws, we're going to go to agave or pasta straws. One of my team members told me they had a pasta straw somewhere, which is hilarious and you know, creative. Oh,
like pasta, like
literal, like
spaghetti?
A spaghetti noodle, but like thicker. So maybe like a really long one of those. Yeah. Anyways. So interesting. But again, I would encourage businesses to really look at it, you know, in the long game. So again, you can spend however many hundreds of dollars annually, thousands, depending on how many straws you typically use, on these disposable items, and even more on these better alternatives, like the ones using renewable resources, or look at how your business can transition to reusables and just be able to keep what you're using in the system instead of the take, make, dispose model. I think that's really where we're going to see change come through. I know in Canada, it's a big focus from our federal government right now with reuse pilots and funding to support that. So hopefully, you know, wherever in the world that's going to be picked up as well. Just making it easier for businesses to do business in a truly sustainable way, not only for the environment, but for their pockets as well. So.
Beautiful. Thanks, Natasha. If somebody wants to know more about your nonprofit, Mind Your Plastics?
Yeah. So they can find us on Instagram. It's mindyourplastic.ca or our website is www.mindyourplastic.ca. I'll clarify it. We often get plastics, but it is singular. So you can find us, yeah, Mind Your Plastic everywhere and then mindyourplastic.ca on Instagram.
Terrific. Thanks for joining this episode of Agave Road Trip, and I'll catch you sometime on a road trip, Natasha.
Amazing. Thanks so much for having us, Lou.
Thanks. You've been listening to Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Gringex bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico. We're blessed with sound engineering by Roy Sierra and a theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Marco Ricos. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, well, I'm sure you'll let us know that too. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Agave Road Trip. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pit Bulls, Inc. Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization using the power of educational storytelling about food to build a more equitable, resilient food system. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network might lead you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If you drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly. Drive responsibly. Eat responsibly, too. And listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive, do not walk either. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to stretch every 30 minutes. If you stretch every 30 minutes, please stay within your defined stretching capacity and consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you don't have a doctor, maybe Dr. Ryan Acock, the Cocktail MD, can help you out. Thanks for listening. Agave Road Trip out.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.